At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Today on The Grave Talks, Dealing with the Dead, a conversation with Wes Forsythe. Wes Forsythe grew up discovering that he had tapped into an ability within himself to sense and see things that he physically otherwise could not, places, people that he never met. He would hold back on examining these abilities until later in life. It all started out watching too much paranormal TV, which led him to do investigations. This drove him into looking into psychic sides of the field. He'd soon find himself as a light worker and tarot reader. Today we hear his stories on The Grave Talks.
My interest, I mean, it started at childhood. I was a kid that read the really geeky books about Bigfoot and UFOs and ghosts and all this, the stuff that was available when I was a kid, which was basically whatever was sold at the book fair.
Sure.
But I had a few what I would call paranormal experience, but just kind of cool stuff to tell stories about, nothing that, you know, was earth shattering. And then finally, I watched a lot of paranormal TV when it all became in the vogue. And I finally decided to get out of my armchair one time and take someone up on an opportunity to actually go ghost hunting in a real purported haunted location. And that's what really kicked in the passion.
Being out there and seeing it firsthand. What were some of those that you kind of brushed over? They were little, you know, things in childhood that you thought were paranormal. What were some of those things?
Well, it was mostly my teenage and early adult years, but I used to have basically very, very vivid dreams about places and or people. And I could usually tell if there was something special about it because the dream would repeat itself. It might change a little, but the overall theme and especially the location would stay the same. And occasionally I would have the opportunity to meet the person or talk to them that I haven't seen in 20 years or whatever, and ask them about it, and come to find out my dreams were freakishly accurate. One of the ones that stands out in my mind was I had a dream about going in someone's house while they were building it, and I actually got to watch how the house kind of came together. In other words, the order it came together.
Yeah.
And what stuck out to me was the kitchen, which was open platform. And then the upstairs, I'm downstairs and there is painting walls and stuff like that, but the upstairs was fully finished. Well, about a year after I had this dream several times, I actually met these people for the first time in my life. I was a salesman and I was in their house and the house looked so familiar. And finally it occurred to me where I knew the house from. And so after I found out I wasn't getting the sale, I started asking them and said, okay, you're going to think this is really, really strange. And I went on and described to them how they built their house, the order they built it. Not only that, but yes, they did in fact finish the upstairs first so that they could move in and finish the lower level at a leisurely pace.
And were they like, okay, you're still not getting the sale. You've just creeped us out.
Yeah, that was pretty much, yeah. No, I did not get the sale. No, it did not. It was one of those conversations. I'm not even sure that they took me seriously.
Sure.
Except that there were things that I knew. So they may have thought I was a stalker or something. I really don't know. Because I never met them again. But it was something that really stood out in my mind.
What was the significance of it when you look back kind of retrospectively? I mean, to have the dream, like you knew this information about these people's home and the history of what happened. I mean, why did you have that dream? Was there some sort of connection or some sort of thing that happened there that you can like lay, you know, your finger on and go, oh, okay.
Honestly, no, other than I do think that I've moved into the metaphysical side of the paranormal world, that I think that was my spirit guide's way of keeping my interest piqued.
Okay.
So that I didn't just brush it all off. I think they wanted to remind me every now and then that there were things going on. And even though I wasn't in touch with them or talking to them, that they were there and somebody was trying to get a message to me.
Yeah. Just like showing you, you know, this may not have much of a significance or a message attached to it, but look what you can do kind of a thing.
Exactly. That's the way I always looked back at it. Because when I actually entered the paranormal world as just, once again, moved from armchair investigator to real world ghost hunter, I really, people would ask me about, you know, well, are you psychic? And my answer was always, no, not at all. Mm-hmm. And then things kind of progressed from there into people saying, yeah, you are, you really are, dude. But that, I think that was just, once again, just wanting to keep my interest piqued enough that I would pursue the field that I ended up in.
Yeah. How interesting. Did you have any other, I mean, when you had that experience, was it confirmation to you that you had some sort of ability? How did you process that when you walked out of that house and started driving, you know, back home or whatever?
I really did. I took it as a confirmation that I would say that I didn't take it as a confirmation that I had any great unique gift. I took it more as a confirmation that, an interpretation that we probably all have this gift, but for some reason, I'm the one that noticed it.
Yeah, you kind of tapped into it.
I'd never really thought that I was that special in that regard. Mm-hmm. It was just a matter of I paid attention to it, and I noticed it, and then that gave me something to kind of lean on when people started telling me, hey, you should really pursue that.
Does something like that improve with time, improve with essentially tapping into it, using it, being aware that you have this ability or this sense?
The only thing I've noticed is that I pay more attention to my dreams, and my we'll call them best dreams, my most vivid dreams tend to have something in them that I'm supposed to know. Something that's going to help me in either a life event or a paranormal event, a paranormal type situation. So when I a lot of times I tell my psychic friends that anytime I'm having these, I feel like I'm in boot camp now, because I feel like it's school for me. It's something I'm supposed to be learning from that vivid experience.
What were some of the other dreams that you had early on, vivid experiences that really, you know, kind of kept you going beyond that one, which is obviously fairly powerful?
Well, the earliest one I remember like that was, I don't know, it happened a few years before that, because I was a teenager, and I do remember I dreamt. Now, I lived and still live in a rural area. Farming is big, and back then tobacco farming was big. And I had, now this was a friend, I'd never been to his house, I'd never been on his farm, but I did dream about this person and his family, but I dreamt about his house, his yard, And what made it interesting is I dreamt about his farm. And when I say that, it wasn't so much the lay of the farm, it's the order and the location of certain fields when they were harvested that fall. Now, I had no connection to the guy at the time. Might have met him in passing, but we weren't close friends. But for some reason, in the dream, I was looking for him, I think, in the dream. And I went to one field and he wasn't there. And they said, go up there, you know. So I was able, when I finally did see him, I met him at a restaurant one night. And I just, it occurred to me that I'd had that dream. And so I went through it with him. And I described his house. I described his yard. I described his farm. And I described the people that worked for them in tobacco that year. The one that stood out was his grandfather. And he was kind of blowing it off until I described the order they cut their tobacco patches. Back then, all the patches were very relatively small. And so when you would go up a holler, you know, they would be cut in a certain order. And then I said, and the one patch is, you got to it from the, you know, going by, I just went over the hill. He said, no, you can't do that. He said, you can't drive down through there. I said, I didn't drive. I walked. And sure enough, there is a footpath that they regularly use from the house to the last patch they cut. And it kind of freaked him out. Mm-hmm. But that was one of the earlier ones that was extremely accurate and extremely vivid. And just over the years, I've dreamt about people's houses that I've not been. Now, lately, though, those type of dreams tend to do more with the location. And sometimes I think there's an overreaching or overarching theme of it. But sometimes I think there's just something I'm supposed to know about that location, even though I haven't went to it yet. And so there's a lot of them on hold, but they're in the back of my mind. And one of these days I'll be on some public ghost hunt probably and say, oh, wow, this was that place.
Why do you think you're getting, you know, information on these places, and what are you supposed to do with it?
Now, that is a really good question, and I do not know the answer overall. Once again, I think sometimes, okay, I have developed into what I would call a light worker.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these are just things that are meant to keep that part of my, as the cliche is, the third eye. In other words, it might just be because I don't use my psychic abilities all that often. It might just be an exercise that I'm put through to keep that part of my brain functioning, to keep me on track. In other cases, as a light worker, I do go in sometimes and help people with paranormal problems. And many of my dreams have not been related to the case I'm going on in, you know, I don't dream about the house before I get there, in other words.
Okay.
But there will be a lesson in a dream that sticks out of my mind that applies to an upcoming case. One in particular that comes to mind, I was going to a young lady, her son, we'd been to help her once before at another location. Her son was very young, and he was seeing little boy spirits and all this stuff. Well, later on, she had moved, and she said, it's not the same thing, but he's having these experiences again. We all are. And so I'd already set up the appointment, but then I had a dream that something in the dream, it was something very, very evil. Now, I could not do anything to it, but I could hide from it. And I could hide the people. So when I got there to work with it, rather than do the normal house cleansing and everything that is associated with the type of work that I do, mm-hmm. I said, you know what, let's hide the house. And you know, I did my little metaphysical bullshit, as I like to call it. But the activity stopped. I think I was being told that that is something that I could do when whatever the entity is not of a type that I can just bully around.
How did you hide the house? What do you mean by that?
Intent.
Okay. Now,
I am going to be the first to tell you that I don't know if I just put on a really good show for people.
Mm-hmm.
and convince them that I've done whatever it is I do, or that I have some otherworldly, we'll call it magical, metaphysical ability to move energy around.
Okay.
But in the dream, it told me to use my energy to hide someone. And so basically that's what I concentrated on doing. I placed, it was some little white crystal that I'd carried around my pocket, and I used it on each corner of the house. But instead of thinking of it as any type of fence or a guard, I thought of it as a bubble, just a bubble that entities could not see through to find this family. And that's what I did. It was all instinctual. It was nothing I read in a book that I remember. It was just something came very instinctually to me. And for better or worse, it worked for that family.
Yeah. So is it when you're doing that, is it a lot of, you know, visualizing with intent of going to put these crystals here and I'm going to visualize and send energy. And in my mind, I'm going to place this bubble around this house. And you're thinking this, you're feeling this. There's obviously no tangible way of showing it, but by doing that with your intent, that ends up actually working.
Yes, that's the way I look at it. Now, I don't do it anymore because one thing, I just over the last few years, I've not been called on those cases. There's more psychics now that will take on the more scary cases, if you will. Used to be your mediums and psychics wanted nothing to do with a family that actually wanted, you know, what felt afraid. Now mm-hmm. they might talk to their dead grandmother who's stomping around the attic, but if they actually felt intimidated, you know, the psychics would say, I don't know if I, cause they would fear that they would bring that home with them or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but I was fairly busy for a while, and yes, I used to carry little rocks in my pocket. Selenite, I believe is the name of it. I used to just carry a pocket full of them. And I felt that those stones absorbed enough of my energy just from being there that they could carry that energy with them. And then I could load them with my intent at the time, if you will, and carry that forward.
Why did you choose to stop doing things like that?
The main reason is I lost a lot of confidence, not in my abilities, but in myself when my father passed away. I put all of my energy into making sure that none of the nastier entities that I'd encountered before used him to get to me. Now, I'm not saying anything told me I should do that. I'm just saying that's what I did. I instructed my spirit guides to watch over my father and to help make sure that when he passed, it was all peaceful, quick, easy, get him out of the house, send him on his way. And I disloaded all of my intent energy into those last few months of his life. Mm-hmm. Now, after he passed away, I did not feel as strong. Now, think of it as pulling a psychic muscle, however you want to look at it. I did not have that confidence going into it for a while. People would ask me, other, you know, psychics would try to, you know, would ask me to go with them on cases. And I said, I don't know that I'm ready. Mm-hmm. So, then that lasted a while, but then I get back into it with a group out of Lexington, Kentucky called Spirit Mechanics. I work with them still sometimes, but I've always considered myself a bit of a blunt object. In other words, I'm not the psychic that can come and, you know, talk to the ghost directly and, you know, get those images. I am just, I'm the blunt object. I don't really take on, I don't do ghost hunting anymore. If you think it's your grandmother visiting you, then I'm probably not the guy to call. So I got out of practice, if you will. And once again, I didn't have to do it. People weren't asking me to do it as often. So that kind of got put on the back burner. And then all along, I've been a podcaster for 15 plus years. Because I'd used it as a learning tool. Mm-hmm. I was interested. There's only so many books and the people that write the books, a lot of times are just not the best sources, but I did feel like the people that are out there actually doing it day to day, I could learn a lot from them. Mm-hmm. And so, podcasting became a bigger chunk of my life. And I've kind of gotten to where, you know, it's a lot easier just to sit around and talk to them and give bad advice than it is to go out in the field and actually do the work.
Tell me about it. Now, I mean, I've been curious about getting out there. It never has worked out for me time-wise or children-wise or any of that wise. Starting to do a little bit of it, but my main thing has always just been be in the studio and hear the stories and kind of be the moderator for everybody to mm-hmm. to share their stuff over the years. Tell me about some of the nasty entities that you've come across. And let's start with like kind of your first encounter with that, and then tell me about some of the other ones that you've come across over the years.
Okay. First of all, I'm going to put out a blanket statement here and say most of the so-called nasty entities that I have encountered are just basically douchebag ghosts.
Sure. They were assholes. No, we call them assholes on the air.
Hey, I like that. I'm going to use that.
Go for it. Yeah.
In other words, they were dicks in life, but dicks in the afterlife.
Yes.
The very first one I encountered actually was one of my first residential investigations. It was, in other words, before I even pursued my psychic side, the evidence we got and the story we got from the homeowner, we couldn't find anything particularly evil, but she kept telling, in other words, she loved her ex-husband, but there was a reason he was her ex-husband.
Sure.
And so we did a little bit of putting two and two together, and but the EVPs we got, the evidence, what evidence we did capture, and the feeling, and I had a psychic with me, and she kept getting these emotions, and so I got called back there a couple years later, after I had went into this part of the field, and then I was able to get a better grasp, at least from my perception of what was going on. And I just, once again, I just really felt like he was a possessive dickhead in life. And that's what he was in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
Now, move forward. Bobby Mackey's Music World, famous haunted location in Kentucky.
Yep.
The tour guide that used to work there, I and another psychic, Terry Page, were there on it was a public event / ghost hunt type thing. But she, for whatever reason, she pulled us aside and picked us out of the crowd to talk to us. And she was very impressed with what we had to say. We'd worked together a few times. And so she said, would you all come back and basically talk to the ghost, if you will. In other words, Bobby, now she gave it a lot more demonic type framing. In other words, she believed that there was a lot more going on in there than I did. But we would go back, and any time that the activity would get what she would call out of hand or violent, you know, people getting pushed, shoved, scratched, whatever, this other psychic and myself were called in to go in and give the ghost a good talking to. And the way I always put it, I was always the father in the front seat saying, don't make me come back there. You know, don't make me stop this car. In other words, I didn't do that much, but I did throw my weight around, if you will. And it would quiet the activity down for a while. So once again, whether it's me putting on a good show for the audience or I do really have that gift, it really doesn't matter because I'm getting results.
Sure, sure. And with something like that, are we dealing more so with, you know, the ghost or the spirits of a human that's very nasty? Like you just said, as far as being able to reason with them, if it's something that's not human, can you negotiate and have that sort of conversation with something that is truly evil and wasn't just an asshole?
Okay, I'm going to go down a deep hole here in my own personal belief.
Cool.
When you're talking about worldly spirits, the general rule is yes, you can reason with them, you can threaten them. Little thing I tell my fellow psychic friends is that if you ever want to cross a spirit and they won't cross over, call their mother. I'm just going to leave it there.
Okay.
Once you get out of the standard ghost definition, then there's just a lot of different types of entities, if you will, that a lot of them are classified generally as elementals. That includes fairies and gnomes and trolls and all the Native American spirits. And a lot of those don't respond to the normal reasoning that you might have, because my general feeling on elementals in particular are they're not evil. They just don't care. In other words, they do what, and if you piss them off, you know, it's not a grudge. It's just a matter of, well, you pissed me off. It's kind of like, you know, the old analogy of, you know, stepping on an ant. You know, they don't have anything against the ant personally, but, you know, they just don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. So now, in my own personal belief system, I believe, and this is through dreams and meditation, and even a couple of psychics that have told me that these are what are following me around. In amongst my spirit guides, I am also blessed to have a Native American spirit. And I do believe that basically when I encounter something that falls into that category, I just call on him and he handles it for me. I believe that I have a fairy that follows me around. When I encounter something that's more of that realm, I can ask the fairy to handle it for me. I'll give her the instructions, but I don't, you know, I'm not bossing her by any means, but for whatever reason, I believe she has been assigned to me to do God's work, if you will.
Sure.
And I've never encountered anything that I would call demonic per se. Now, I do believe that certain human spirits will go, I've called it devolving. In other words, they, whether it's making a deal with the devil or something natural that happens when you have a really shitty personality in life, I do think certain ones of those manage to get certain abilities in the afterlife that we can interpret as being evil or demonic.
Okay.
And so when... But they still seem to respond to the same energy gifts that I believe light workers like myself are blessed with. So in other words, you know, I can my own thing, and this goes against what a lot of psychics will tell you people can and cannot do. But then I take the psychic with me on an investigation, and they say, well, maybe you can. But I believe that I can take an entity, in particular ghost, a human entity, I should say, and move them. If I don't like where they are, I believe that I can move them. And that comes in handy when you're trying to communicate with them and they don't want to communicate. And the other thing is, I think it kind of freaks them out sometimes.
Well, it's interesting when you think of it, you have the idea that a deceased human being that's on the other side, for example, the Native American one that you were talking about, I'm assuming you're referring that they were once living here on Earth before they passed,
right?
Correct? Okay, so if they can basically get abilities in a positive way of helping that they did not have in this life on Earth, one would assume that based on choice, if you're an asshole and you gravitate toward negativity in life and you continue to gravitate toward negativity in death, maybe there's some bonus powers over there too, on the opposite end of where the Native American is doing this in a positive way to help. Maybe there's things where, yeah, you know, the asshole Uncle George over there, he, you know, did all these horrible things in life, but now, yeah, he does have a little bit more power in death and able to do things than he could have done here. Doesn't make him demonic, but it's just, he has more powers in death of being right, an asshole over there.
And a lot, now this does go to certain TV shows. A lot of people, and honestly, in full disclosure, a lot of churches teach this also. But a lot of people, when they encounter anything they don't understand, that needle already this swings over to the red zone into the demonic zone.
Sure.
And so I see that a lot. That's not my personal belief system. It's not even something I was taught in church growing up. And I do have a very, despite these little weird tangents I go in, my belief system is very, very Judeo-Christian based. Mm-hmm. And so, but yeah, that's, with Native Americans, a lot of times what I felt that I've encountered is they weren't particularly happy with the white man when they passed away, and nothing's happened in the meantime to change your mind. So, and that's what my spirit guide's for.
So there's still that feeling of what life was like for them, and rightfully so, yeah, of feeling walked on and used.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, and even short of that, just if you see somebody throw litter in the street, most people don't like that person at that moment. Now, if you're locked into that mindset for, we'll call it eternity, but I don't know the definition of what the afterlife is. So yeah, if you're locked in that mindset, well, you know, the white man came in here and pushed us off our land. Well, now if we can cause a little trouble for him, you know, screw him.
Sure. Do you think, and this is just an opinion, obviously, all this is opinion, obviously, it's all conjecture.
Oh, well, yes, no, that's but, one that I have my belief system.
Factually tell me what this has happened. Do you think that one on the other side, you said, you know, they almost devolve, and then there's people that evolve on the other side. Can one on the other side that has devolved have a awakening, if you will, and say, you know what, I've done a lot of horrible shit, I've been a bad person, I've been a bad ghost too. Can they change their ways at some point and go, I'm going to go back the other way?
As I always like to say when I'm on investigations and I don't know the answer, I'll just say that's above my pay grade.
Sure.
My job, and when I say my job, I don't actually get paid for any of this. My job, given to me by God or the angels or however your interpretation might be,
yeah,
is to alleviate the problem. And this popped into my head one day. The golden rule of the afterlife is the dead may not interfere with the living. Now, that's not the same as saying that they can't interact, they can't do whatever. But if their interaction creates a hindrance, then they've broken that rule. And people say, well, they broke a rule. No, people speed all the time. People break rules all the time. But my job is at that point to be as Mary Ducina called me, another psychic. She calls me a soul sharer. She says, deep in your heart, you know the laws. You know the rules of the afterlife, and your job is to enforce them. And usually when that happens, I call upon my guides and angels to, for lack of a better word, arrest them. I never actually use that word when it happens, but to remove them. In other words, some people cross spirits. Sometimes I just get them removed. And then what happens once they're removed, once they're through the light, is none of my business.
So when you're removing a spirit from a home that is essentially breaking the rules, right? Like one that is right, interfering with human life, and you remove them from that home, do they just go to another home and find somebody else to screw with? Or are you crossing them over, so to speak?
I concentrate on crossing them over. Now, my first line of interference, if you will, is just to go in and say, look, you don't want me to come back. Just shut up. Mind your manners, behave, whatever. Usually that works. I've got a restaurant here in town that called me, and dishes were getting broken. They were seeing things, you know, it was really freaking them out. And so they called me in, and I went in and had a good talk with everybody. And just for spite, and it's funny. Okay, now the entire story is, yes, the activity died down for quite a while. But the night after I left, the next morning, there was a bunch of broken dishes. In other words, it was kind of a, okay, fine, you know, temper tantrum on the way out. Now, did I remove that spirit? Absolutely not. I put no effort into removing that spirit. I just wanted them to behave. Then next time I came back, and this was probably a year later when they called me back in, this time I was more forceful with it. And I didn't remove anybody, but I closed some portals, if you will. In other words, I closed some doors so they couldn't come and go freely around the neighborhood. In other words, I confined them, and that seemed, and for all the stories I got was that seemed to work. That seemed to make them, the spirits realize that I could exert a certain amount of control. Now, whether they left of their own volition, I don't know. I just know that I didn't get called back there.
Interesting. Well, this is something that we kind of, you've addressed or you've talked about many times here in our conversation, but we never really addressed it for the audience. Being a light worker, what does that mean to you?
Okay, now I call myself a light worker because actually I if it was left up to me, I would say I'm an energy worker. But if you go to a psychic fair and say I'm an energy worker, people will ask you for a massage.
Okay.
And I just, that's not in my wheelhouse.
You don't like giving massages. Okay, that's understandable.
But as a but most time there's kind of a crossover definition, and light worker doesn't bother me as much. I feel like I work with energy, but at the same time, one thing I do to cross spirits over, if you will, is I show them my light, or I carry a light with me, God's light, however you want to look at it.
Sure.
And so when I actually cross a spirit over, I concentrate on that light getting bright enough they can see it, they can see the doorway, and so that's why I've kind of embraced that term. Light worker in general, that is very similar to the definition I think most of them would use, that they are just there to bring God's light or spirit's light or however they want to define their own theology to the deceased so that we can make it easier for them to cross over the way they were intended to do. You got to remember, see, part of this, and that might be why God chose me. I've always had this attitude that if ghosts were real, based on my Judeo-Christian theology, that basically that's just people that didn't follow instructions. When it gets right down to it, when they passed away and the light shined, they just said, "No, I got other stuff to do."
Okay.
This is a personal belief. I believe the further you are from death, the harder it is to find your way back to that light. For whatever reason, they can't see it, they can't feel it. I do think it's always there, but they tune it out, if you will.
Okay. It's something that's always interested me, of the whole idea that the dead need a person, a living person, who has no experience on the other side, or at least conscious experience on the other side, that we're able to go and say, okay, hey, by the way, I know you're over there, but just go to the light. It's all good. It's like the suggestion suddenly creates this portal, and Scott Bakula walks out of it and says, "Yeah, come on in."
I don't feel it's suddenly created. I think it's there, and my job is to maybe enhance it, shine a flashlight, laser pointer, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, and then I found that calling, and I base this on the old ghost stories where, you know, when people would have a near death experience or be brought back, they'd say, "Well, my family was there," beckoning me, telling me I had to go back, whatever. And I'm thinking, okay, if the family's there, then if I got to get rid of your ass, then let's call that family in. And I just found that mothers seem to work even on the nastiest spirits.
How interesting. When you have an ability like that, is it something that you think, obviously you said that, you know, you've learned how to tap into this. Do you think it's something that everyone has, that just most don't ever tap to it?
I think asking that is like asking an artist if everyone can draw.
Sure.
Sure, you know, yeah.
Everyone can draw, but can they draw to that level?
Right. I've kind of taken it as a gift horse, if you will.
Okay.
I just accept it, that it's part of me, and do what I feel I'm asked to do. Can anybody do it? Probably. But once again, I didn't have the mindset that a lot of people, just like a lot of psychics, and I alluded to this before, say that, you know, you cannot cross over an unwilling spirit. I had a psychic friend that, you know, he passed away a few years ago, but he had heard my stories and he'd seen me in action doing my stuff. And I always thought that, you know, he thought of me as a spiritual warrior, if you will. Mm-hmm. But then I caught an interview where somebody asked him one night, and he said, "No, you cannot cross an unwilling spirit." And it kind of hurt my feelings, to be honest with you, because I felt that, you know, I could do that. Now, is it a I guess you could get into the language of it. You know, when they're truly unwilling, am I actually crossing them? Possibly not by his definition.
Okay.
Removing them and crossing them may not have been the same thing. But to me, in other words, but some psychics, you can't make a ghost do anything you don't want them to. Maybe I can't per se, but I have friends that can.
Interesting. We were talking a little bit earlier about locations and places that you kind of store in the back of your mind that maybe you'll arrive there someday. Have you ever had a situation where you knew where you were looking at in this dream, but yet you have never been there yet? That is on the list of, I want to see how much this dream matches up to reality. Or are the locations that you see nondescript enough that it's hard to say where this was?
Because I've done so many residentials, and when it gets right down to it, most houses look alike.
Yeah.
So, you know, sure. The one that sticks out of my mind that I still have not been to is I keep dreaming about someplace, and it has like, I guess it would be like smelting furnaces on the lower level. That's a fairly big place, but it has these furnaces, and they're not for heating, it doesn't seem. It seems like they're more industrial. And there's several of them. Now, I've never stopped to count them in the dream, but they're scattered around the lower level of whatever building this is. And I do feel like one of these days I am going to be walking in there, and there's something that has been in those dreams that I haven't really picked up on that is going to come in handy. But that's the one that sticks out in my mind, as I've dreamt about it probably hundreds of times and still have not been there physically.
Do you plan on going sometime?
Well, I mean, if I'm invited, that's another thing, because of my the whole podcasting thing, and then I work for the Scarefest Horror and Paranormal Convention doing their weekly YouTube show. Mm-hmm. I get whenever I don't get invited to that many places as a celebrity, but when I do, it's usually on that level. And so I'm really expecting one of these days to get invited on the B or C card of some paranormal investigation. In other words, hey, it'll be Jason Halls and then three other people that you've heard of, and then me down at the bottom.
Yeah.
And yeah, but it'll be someplace, and I'll go in there, and yeah, you know, and it'll all ring true to me. And then that'll be another story that I'll have.
Sure. Sure. That wraps up part one of our conversation with Wes. In part two, what does being a light worker mean? Has he ever had a dream of a location? You know where it is, but have never physically been there. And the ideology of it's the devil or demonic, overused quite a bit. Does Wes see any difference between trying to communicate with the dead through a Ouija board versus other modern tools? And how did Wes discover his ability to read tarot cards? And what was his attitude then and now? Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.